Welcome. The Nonprofit Partnership for Public Service recently released a study, co-sponsored with Deloitte, titled Helping Government Deliver, Transforming Mission and Support Services. The report argues that while many federal, state, and local governments and agencies have consolidated and shared services in order to become more efficient with tax dollars and improve customer service, the potential exists for much more significant collaboration within government. To learn more, we're joined by the report's lead, Judy England Joseph. Judy, welcome.
Thank you, Andy. Good to see you.
So, Judy, this report is about highlighting agencies that are sharing multiple support and mission-critical functions within an entire department, and ideally across departments. Tell us the motivation behind your investigation into good examples of places that are doing this.
There were two or three factors, I think, that really contributed to this. One was that we see movement in government to try to tackle tough cross-cutting problems. In fact, we issued a report a year or so ago saying that we need to think of government as an enterprise, not individual agencies, but government as a whole. And we need to work together on solving problems that no one agency can do. But when I looked at that report and stepped back and said, well, all right, if we're moving in that direction with things like cross-cutting strategic goals that are defined by a particular administration, how do we ever tackle government-wide problems if we're not able to work collaboratively within agencies? And so the real question was, are we doing anything within agencies to consolidate, collaborate, share resources in a way that helps to leverage what we now see are very scarce resources?
In the report, you note that on the journey toward an agency-wide approach to delivering mission and support services, agencies often start by sharing a single line of business. It's often a support function like HR or IT or financial management or accounting that's consolidated into one office to serve the organization. The next step along the journey, you note, is having multiple support functions consolidated or co-located to serve an organization. And an example that you cite is NASA's Shared Services Center. Tell us about that.
At NASA, they created a business center where they integrated all of these different back office operations with the idea of saying we want it to be seamless so that we look at ourselves as a part of a bigger system. And there isn't this handoff, okay, I'm done because I've done my HR thing. Now I'm going to give it to you because you're the payroll guy. And then you're done, you're going to give it to the finance guy. No, we understand that we're all a part of this system and that sometimes we don't hand off at all. That's what NASA did.
So NASA is a good example of back office consolidation. In other words, an integrated approach to getting rid of stovepipes for traditional business lines of services. If we move up the continuum, the next step is melding together not just back office, but mission delivery services. And there you found an example from the Department of Energy, from their Office of Environmental Management that works with contaminated sites. Tell us what they do.
They're responsible for closing down nuclear weapons facilities that are terribly contaminated from World War II. And they set out as a goal a few years ago to close down all of these facilities, bring them back to green space, which I got to tell you is a monumental task in and of itself because I used to have responsibility for the nuclear weapons complex work at GAO. I never would have thought that I'd be sitting here today seeing that we've actually closed these facilities down and they are clean spaces that are environmentally safe for people. But back in 2005, the Department of Energy in this environmental management organization set out as a goal to close these facilities down and clean them up. Well, when you say that date certain, we're going to close these facilities down and we begin to close them down, what happens to your expertise? The people who are out in those facilities can read the writing on the wall. They're not going to have a job in a few years. And they're some of the best people out there in terms of environmental cleanup. We could not risk losing that talent. And so DOE said, what are we going to do differently to hold on to this talent and still have the expertise we need to be able to close these facilities down and meet all the environmental requirements at the federal, state, and local level? So they consolidated all of their talent in the cleanup and closing of these facilities. Now these people are centrally located and they're working on many different projects. The other thing about that particular example was that in addition to contracting or procurement, IT, HR, these, again, traditional sort of back office business functions, they linked or integrated front office, environmental, safe, nuclear health and safety people, lawyers. They brought together the people that are on the ground in these locations required to meet certain standards to clean up and close down these facilities. That's direct mission delivery. They put them on project teams alongside of the HR and the IT and the procurement folks so that they could hand in hand work together to get whatever contracts they needed in terms of special expertise we might not have had in government, as well as meet certain requirements, what states and localities require, as well as federal laws. So they team these people up in a multidisciplinary way to tackle the closing of these facilities.
You've noted that this consolidation within this office also helped strengthen their contracting expertise and that produced benefits for the agency.
What they found was by consolidating and bringing this expertise together in one location, the people who were doing things like multi-million dollar contracts are doing them all the time. They're getting better and better. They're standardizing their processes. They went from bid protests that were sort of the norm, you know, and that'll stop any project in its tracks if there's another company who feels that some unfair practices were used or some process wasn't used appropriately or followed appropriately. They went from having the norm be companies protesting a particular bid to no protests. And that's because they became so expert at doing this and standardizing the process in the meantime that they've gotten it down right. They have become some of the best people in government on doing multi-million dollar projects. So good that when we had the American Recovery Act, the billions of dollars that DOE received in their environmental management area all went to the center because they could process these contracts quickly and reliably in a way that could get that money out to where it needed to be.
The final step on a continuum of service delivery approaches that you discuss, from sharing single lines of businesses, as we've discussed, to more integrated approaches, is interagency cooperation. In other words, different agencies or jurisdictions working together to achieve cross-government goals and priorities. And there you cite the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, and the county in which it is, Mecklenburg County, as examples. What did you find?
What we learned was they went through just what we're going through today. Oh, let's furlough first because the budget's, you know, being cut and we're needing to figure out where we can cut corners. And so it was sort of slice off the top 10% across everybody. Everybody feels the pain. But they didn't fundamentally change the way they operated. Well, you go through that 2 or 3 years and suddenly you realize the writing's on the wall. This isn't going to go away and we've got to change the way we do business. So they began looking at shared services as a way of reducing their footprint, reducing costs, increasing economies of scale. What I love about this story is that it's two jurisdictions, governmental jurisdictions, in a way not too different from having a Department of Energy and a Department of Defense trying to figure out how to work together. Big mega entities that have their own sort of governing structure, they have their own committees that are responsible for them. Even in that situation, they stepped back and said, what do we do in common? Like, how many police forces do we have? You know, they had park police, they had building security, they had people that were doing various kinds of law enforcement. And they said, why do we have so many different police forces or law enforcement entities? And can we consolidate them in a way that relies on one infrastructure, one way of paying, one way of rating and ranking, all of those kinds of things, and to be able to hold them all accountable equally in a fair way? They found that the city could manage the police force more effectively simply because of the density and the need for more police. And there's just the size of the police force was greater. That the county asked the city to be the primary manager of the law enforcement activity of these two jurisdictions. And the county essentially pays the city to do that management.
And I know Charlotte and Mecklenburg County are sharing other services as well. So Judy, we've heard three useful examples of sharing and consolidating services. I think it's worth asking, if the benefits, at least in these examples, are so clear, why isn't this happening more? And I know one reason that you've discussed is the issue of incentives, that public leaders and managers are usually rewarded in terms of status and pay. by how large their organizations are, how many people they manage, not by necessarily creating efficiencies. But there's also another reason that I think is very legitimate, and that's a fear that consolidating services can lead to lower quality services. If my office's HR department suddenly goes away, will I receive the same customer service, for example? And so I think it's worth noting that these efforts have been as much about improving customer service as they are about gains in efficiency or reducing costs.
Yeah, I love that you asked that question or you made that comment, because when we started this, we said this is not going to be a study about how do we just save money. Because we've done that. We've tried to save money. We have experimented with a lot of ways of cutting the cost of operations. And we've lost sight of the outcome. We've lost sight of customer satisfaction. It's like the only reason we're doing it is to cut cost and not to have better service. What I loved about every example here was that the customer and their experience was foremost. It was the number one reason, the number one metric each of these entities held out for themselves.
They internal said, customers.
Internal customers or external. But in the cases of these examples, particularly NASA, it was the other centers, so the NASA employees. In Charlotte and Mecklenburg, it was citizen services. Ultimately, that it was the citizen-facing stuff that mattered to them. And so they're in the business right now of trying to collect as much information as they can about the quality of the service that the citizens see being provided. Because what happened was the citizens were saying, you're cutting, but I still need these services. And I don't just need them, I need them to be done well. So they have like these 311 call centers, right, as a way of getting more consolidated, immediate feedback for a service need that a particular citizen has at the locality. They want to call. They don't know who to call. And what the city and county did was they created a call center so that you and I, if we're a citizen down there, we just call one number. They're going to connect us to who we need to talk to. We don't have to bother with that.
And a strong customer service focus in your NASA example as well.
Let me just tell you, they are data-driven. The evidence that they're using day in and day out. This isn't sort of a once a year, let's figure out how well we're doing. Every day they have reports.
This shared services center does.
This shared service center in NASA. And they're talking about what the customer is saying, these other centers that are being serviced. Why? Because the concerns early on was, if I give up my locally owned, locally controlled HR person to somebody in Stennis, Mississippi, how am I going to make sure that you're giving me the service that I need? There was great fear that the service quality would go down.
Final question, Judy. Tell us some of the tips that you and your team gained in doing this research about being successful in transforming these mission and support services.
Well, you have to have a clear and compelling business case. I mean, you just can't say, well, you know, somebody else is doing this, so let's do it. You got to know, what is it I'm really trying to do here? And what's the difference I'm trying to make? How am I going to measure the success of what I'm doing or the failure so that I understand if I'm not doing a good job? So there's sort of this clarity of vision and then the metrics to help guide that vision to fruition. One thing we noticed in all of these examples was that the people who were at the lead executives, came from within the system in some way. They may not have grown up in the agency where they are now the head of that particular activity, but they grew up in public administration. They were either state and local or they were in the federal government as a career employee. So they grew up on the inside. They understood what it takes to change. They understand the culture that needs to shift. And then several of them then moved out and became political appointees. So then the shoe's on the other foot. They realize, all right, now how do I get the right stakeholders involved? Who is it I have to convince above me? And above me can be Congress, or it can be other executives that are clearly above you within the entity. It could be OMB. It could be a lot of different people. But they bring a perspective. It's both the political sort of savviness of what is it going to take with the insider knowledge of how do I convince people that they can trust me, that I understand what's going on here and what needs to be fixed? And it, you know, trust is, as you mentioned earlier, a critical part of this. People have to believe if I give something up, I'm going to get something for it. And hopefully it's something better than what I gave up. And if I lose, then I'm not really losing. I'm really the organization is gaining from this. Because most of these people are here because they really care about what they do and they want to make a difference. And when they see that something that they have taken the risk to try is successful, it just breeds more interest in risk-taking, more interest in trying new things.
Judy England-Joseph from the Partnership for Public Service. Judy, thanks very much.